All right, so since I don't even know when, what year, Ennis, do you know what year we started podcasting together? Like when we started to do shows together?
I'm horrible at this. I'm so bad at it too. I don't know. It could be 1927 for all I know. Yeah. No, I have no idea. My wife is so good at, like, I'm horrible, horrible. I know. Let's see. I started at the Fan in 2002. Does that help you?
Not really. Not like a ton, to be honest. Like, it doesn't do a whole hell of a lot. Here's how I frame my life. Is I have no idea when anything happened, like during the pandemic, essentially. I always have to go, okay, that was during the pandemic, right? And I can kind of remember two summers where you were allowed to be outside but not inside, and I mush all those together. I remember the 2019 Raptors run. Like, that's my point of reference for life, yeah, right? Is like, I go...
And then 2015, okay, the Blue Jays made, yes, the playoffs for the first time. That's it. Yeah,
but that's...
2004, the Red Sox won the World Series. Yeah, that's how,
okay,
I do it.
No, but okay... This actually is proof positive that I need the Toronto sports teams to be good, my sports, yeah, teams to be good, because if they're not, then I have no point of reference for anything, and I'm just stumbling through my past aimlessly going, what, when was that? I have, yeah, no idea. I remember the summer of 2015 vividly. I can tell you stories of the summer of 2015. Yeah. If someone was like, if I had to go to court, right, and they said, yeah, summer of 2015, this day, I would go, you know what? I could actually pull up some details from this day. If they went summer of 2017, when the Blue Jays stripped the team down, and I would go, yeah, to the Rogers Center, and there was no... But I'm only even able to remember it was the summer of 2017 because I went, oh, right, and then they were bad, right? Kendrys came, yeah, to town, and
you,
Walker, and Sam McKee told me that I wasn't allowed to cheer for Kendrys Morales because I didn't think it was a good move to get him.
Yeah, well,
that was...
And, whatever. Yeah. You know, I've actually got another solution for you. I mean, yeah, ideally a Toronto sports team wins a championship,
yeah,
and that
that's
allows
sweet.
Us to
they're
start
enough
again
to win a, like, championship just to have a memorable playoff run, you know? Like,
sure,
just that.
Yeah, you're right, because, yeah, that's the bar outside of 2019 in the city. No, the other, yeah, thing, you could have a kid, because that it does do it for me. Like, hey, yeah, I remember, well, I mean, it's tough because my first kid was born in 2015, so, like, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to, yeah, say, way to go, idiot.
Like, no,
yeah,
but the, like, second one, 2018, the nothing, yeah, memorable happened in 2018 other
no,
than
nothing.
My kid was born, so I remember that, and I could have gone to the Masters, but didn't because, you know, he had to be born in April. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks. So that's your memories of 2018. My kid was born, and, yeah, I didn't go to the Masters. Something you didn't
right.
do is
that's
your
right.
big memory from 2018. My memory from that year, actually, we can kind of do this now, okay? We've sort of put the puzzle together here because we got our first show together when you found out you were your wife was pregnant with your second kid.
Yes, okay, so that's 20... I went to the Masters for the first time in 2017. Well, I didn't see Sergio Garcia win, but I saw him play on the Friday of the 2017 Masters.
So you and I, we did this, we started this in 2017, which is wild
to think
about.
This is sad. Like, I'm actually... Like, there's no other way to frame my life than other than through the sports prism.
Buddy... It's okay. Welcome. You know, like, I've already known this about myself, and I'm sorry to be involving you in this, but I remember because you and I were heading to a pub shortly after I got the news that I was going to be your co-host, right? I got offered a job in Vancouver. I turned it down. You and I kept talking. We really wanted to do the show.
Yeah,
we really wanted to do a We really wanted to do a show together. We had a vision for the show. But the former program director was very, like...
Really? Behind the curtain?
Yeah. He was pretty pushbacky. He tried out a lot of people that, let's just say, you were not as stoked on doing a show with as you were doing it with me.
I think the listeners are getting the first peek behind this curtain. You've never told this story on the air, have you?
I don't know. Probably not, but who cares? This is good hour. This is for the diehards, all right? This is for the people who love Good Show. This is for the day ones. This is for the people who have left the five-star reviews, who subscribe to the pod, who get stoked for this part of the thing, right? So you and I, it happens. It finally happens after I turn down a job with no security, no promise of being an on-air host. Pretty risky
Across
move by
the
me.
Continent. Yeah.
Yeah, it was far away. It was definitely, and yeah, I would have had to, yeah. Yeah, be around people I didn't want to be around. But yeah, so I we get it, and you and I decide to go celebrate at a pub. And we're stoked on this, and we go, and two memorable things happen that day. One is Andrew Walker yelled at Mark Messier.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my. Oh.
Yeah.
One of the top five funniest moments in my entire life, I think.
Yeah. Well, I actually wanted to die. I still don't think it's funny because where I was seated, Messier looked at me, and I'll never forget just the feeling of I'm so sorry for what has just happened here.
You have to tell the story, right?
Well, Mark Messier, who was wearing a leather jacket in the summertime, and looking cool, very cool, and very jacked. And this is a man who, you know, dated Madonna in his prime and in her prime. Very cool guy, leader among men, amazing captain, hockey legend, every kind of legend. He's standing at the bar, and for whatever reason, Andrew Walker just drunkenly leaned over and started yelling, "Moose,
Moose." You're telling it all wrong. No, because you pointed out, you obviously, like, Mark Messier unmistakable. It's Mark Messier, and you're like, oh, look, there's Mark Messier. And Andrew Walker, assuming you just meant it's a guy that looks like Mark Messier, yelled Mark Messier at the guy, like, as if he was making fun of the guy that looks like Mark Messier. And we're like, no, that's actually Mark Messier. He didn't think it was actually Mark Messier.
But he wasn't yelling Messier. He was yelling, Moose, Moose,
yes,
like they
exactly.
were friends.
Yeah.
Like
yes.
they were good pals. And Messier looked over with the look of someone who smelled hot. He opened up an apartment door with a corpse in it for months. Like, you know, just complete stink face. And I locked eyes with that stink face, and I felt bad about myself and the company that I kept. But the other thing that happened that day is you told me that you revealed to me that you were having a second child. And you said, and do you remember your confidence at the time?
Yeah, I mean, the second one's easy. Once you get one out of the way, they basically raise each other. So you just,
that was basically the line you fed, to which, it was didn't turn out that way. It turns out that the second kid is way harder.
Especially, listen, I love both my kids. Second kid is, he needs a little more hands-on attention than the first, I would say.
Yeah.
Second
kid
more likely to be the cause of tears, to be the cause of... He's the creator of chaos.
Yeah, he's a tear creator and also a tear maker, you know? Like,
That's right.
He's a wild card. He'll fill this
non-tear void with my own tears if I have to.
If I'm not making somebody cry, I'll do the crying, okay? Somebody will cry today should be his credo.
Right.
Every day he wakes up and he heads out into the world, someone will cry today. But, okay, all this is to say is that this is the first time since then that we've ever done a broadcast together where I can't see you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm in the car looking like an idiot with a headset on. People have headsets on while they're driving cars, but ones that look like they're discreet. This is like a giant gamer headset.
It's
a giant white headset.
Someone's going
to
tap on your window and be like,
Roger,
what are you doing,
Center,
buddy?
To see the unveiling.
Yeah. Hey, buddy, what are you doing? Is this your car? You can be like, vroom, vroom. Like, that's not going to be...
Are you playing Modern Warfare in there?
Yeah. Oh, you got a friend that you're playing with? You're like, my friend, we're doing a talk show together. They're like, you are. That's definitely...
Yeah, I was like, sure you are, psycho.
Security's going to come up, probably have to talk to you. But because we had the pandemic and Zoom happened and everything else was in studio before then. But you're down at the Rogers Center and you're about to go to... what must be an elitist, they had to break up the media because there's obviously a lot of people that are still in Kansas City right now. But you're going to get your first look at the renos. They're done. They're ahead of schedule. A Toronto construction group is ahead of schedule. This should be the number one story in the entire
city. We'll see. We haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, actually, you get in there and there's just a bunch of guys in beaters and hard hats. And they're like, so you're actually here because we need you to chip in. we need you to help out. So grab a shovel. Grab one of those signs that says slow. That's what we need you to do. So what are you most excited for down there? Because we've seen a million different graphics, right? And so, you stepping into this, do you have high expectations for big changes for the park? Because I've gone a little back and forth on it, I'll be honest.
So I'm most excited to see the fence dimensions and how the ballpark is actually going to play for baseball. And yeah, the social spaces, that's cool, and I will certainly be using them. I don't necessarily understand like how each one has its own little kitschy thing. Like one of them is supposed to be a park, one of them is supposed to be like a subway station, which again, like that's a bad idea to try and market something around being at a subway station. Let's not do that. But there's one I actually was hearing Dan Chulman do the promo for yesterday. It's like, and it's got live music. It was like, really? You go to a baseball game to listen to live music at a bar? Like, I get it. Like, not everybody is totally into the game, but like, yeah, you are ultimately at the ballpark to watch a baseball game. So I'll be interested to see, and I don't know if they'll have the live music actually playing. I don't know if we'll get to sample the various fare from each of, I think, the five social spaces. That's also, I like food, so I'm looking forward to trying that if we get to do it. But no, I want to see what 16 feet looks like in right center field, and what it's like a 20-foot high wall. Like, what does that look like? What are the bullpens, elevated bullpens? What does that look like? What about that little cutout in center field where Kevin Kiermaier is going to be stealing like five home runs a game? What does that look like? That's the thing I'm most interested in.
So this is why I wanted to talk about this with you today, because I want to set our expectations, and then later, after we've both been to the ballpark, you'll be there on opening day, obviously, right? You're going to do the show from there?
Yep.
Yeah, this will be my first opening day. Well, no, this is going to be the first one that I missed since 2013, actually, other than COVID, because, I have Leafs talk afterwards, and they play the Lightning. Right. Yeah, so I won't be able to get out of that one.
Yeah, with nobody's lineup in there. Yeah, the second last game of the regular season. You won't miss the Raptors play-in tournament. They're likely going to play in that the play-in tournament on the Wednesday, I guess. But yeah, that's a bummer, man. Yeah, that is a tradition for you. I imagine you'll have a Bud Light in honor of opening day.
No, that's too sad. Like sitting at home watching the Tampa Bay Lightning on a second screen, pretending that I care, versus the Jays home opener, one of my favorite days the entire year. Adding a Bud Light to that mix is way too sad. Like that'll put me in a Leafs talk will start and it'll just be me staring into the camera, being like, "I hope you're happy that you get this," just belittling the listeners of that product as they watch Leafs talk. But no, so I think you and I are looking forward to two very different things, because the ballpark dimensions, to me, it, weirdly enough, it's kind of like the least interesting thing, because it's just, all right, fine. You're both going to be playing in the same ballpark. I've never been a ballpark dimension guy. I get a little frustrated sometimes when it's a joke ballpark, when there's a short fence like at Yankee Stadium. And I also get frustrated sometimes when there's home runs that should be home runs. Like yesterday, it's called Kauffman still,
right? Mike, there was like four of them. There was like any normal ballpark, I think that score, it might have been double-digit scoring that game yesterday anywhere other than Kauffman.
That's it. It's like 3-0, and there was this whole stat about the Blue Jays not hitting home runs, and I'm going, well, they did start here. They're playing the Royals in their stadium. What would this have been if they played the Royals at the Rogers Center to start this season? How many more home runs the Jays would have? But yeah, I really am curious to see how effective the other stuff is, because I know you are a baseball hardcore, so am I to a degree, but to a lesser extent. I use the ballpark as a real social venue. That's a place in the city that brings people together and where I get the chance to meet up with people that I don't see all the time. It's great. Like, it really is. You go to a ball game with your closest friends, but your peripheral friends, it's a perfect spot, ideally, to just go grab a beer with someone that you haven't seen in a while. They go, "Hey, are you going to the Jays this weekend?" And I'm there a lot, so I get to say, "Yes, I'm going to be there." But it's usually been, "Hey, go hang out in the gloomy, not tunnels. What do you call the area that is up the stairs?
Concourse.
Yeah, the concourse. The gloomy concourse where there isn't much and there's a lot of lines and it's just not great and you can't see the ball game. I'm really curious to see how effective this stuff is. I've got my antennas up for this whole you can just buy a ticket to be a wanderer around the stadium rather than just like have a seat in the 500s, because I kind of thought that was the deal of the 500 section already, and whether that ends up making it a little overpopulated.
You can do that too. I was a little bit I had my head was scratched a little bit there too, because the 500 level ticket, and I hope I'm not like blowing it all up for the Blue Jays here, but I did check the pricing on the cheapest 500 level ticket, and it is slightly cheaper than $20. Maybe the $20 go anywhere ticket is for instances in which the Rogers Center is sold out, so that you can still get in if there are no 500 level seats. But no, anybody with a ticket, a normal seat ticket, is eligible to go to any of these social spaces. So
yeah,
I mean, if there are 500 level seats available, that still works.
Well, it's weird because the first game I'll go to is the 12th. Assuming actually now I'm thinking I won't be at that game if that's when the Raptors play in is, because I won't want to have those conflicts. So great, yeah. Thanks. I'll just never go to a Jays game. How about that? I'll just never go. Fine. I'll just never go to the thing I like. When I eventually do go, when I get down to the ballpark, I can't wait to cruise around and check out every little nook and cranny of that place. But to me, it's like, I need to see that stuff not on the day that you're doing. You're right. The day that you're doing is way better for the ballpark dimensions, where you get to check that out and take a peek, rather than the social stuff, because there's no other people there. So to see how congested it gets, how fluid it is, how it executes in person is going to be when they actually have, the staff working and the people congregating. So, but I just really, really, really hope it works out well, because it has been, to me, the biggest sore spot of the Rogers Center for a very long time, which is you basically are stuck to your seats, and if you get up, it's not a really enjoyable experience everywhere else. And I actually like the live music thing. I know that it seems weird, but I love the idea that if you're at a crappy baseball game and you paid a ticket and the team is losing 10-1, that you don't feel like you just have to either sit there and continue to drink the overpriced beers and to get a feeling of your experience, that you can move around, you can mingle, you can get other experiences for your ticket price. So I'm actually kind of down with that.
Yeah, and you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, and I mentioned the park, the one social space that's supposed to be modeled after a Toronto park experience, I am thinking about my own kids and bringing them to the ballpark, and they love to go. They organize. They like, because I have every Blue Jays game on at home right before they go to bed, and they hear Dan talk about the promos for the bobbleheads. They're like, we're going to that game. We want to go see the Vlad Gold Gloves extended bobblehead. Yeah. We want that. We want like 10 of them. Can we go to that game, and can we go like 3 hours early? And then once we get in and get our bobbleheads, can we go home? Like, can we tell you that we're already sick of this thing and can we go home?
But I was going to say that they hate the bobblehead. They get it. They get it. The experience of having it for that one moment, elite. And then 10 seconds later, they're like, what is this? Doesn't even do anything. So just here, Dad, can you hold it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. No, I have to hold it. I've been in situations where literally we're not even three outs into the baseball game, and my 5-year-old is saying, "All right, time to go home now." And I'm like, "No, the bobblehead is only supposed to be like the precursor to the baseball. That's why we're here. That's why Daddy, that's what Daddy paid the money for, is for the baseball game." So maybe there's like some sort of, I don't know, that would make a ton of sense if in the park social space there's areas for the kids to play on, like park equipment. Are there like swings and slides and stuff? That to me sounds like something that would be used, especially by me. So I'm interested to see if that is what's at the park one.
See, I think what they should have is just like some kind of small minor giveaway at those things, those kids areas. Because think about that, like, you just, because you're right, you can give your kid anything. Like the bobblehead thing, it's irrelevant. It's just that they get a thing. Right?
Right.
You're getting a thing. And it's a thing that you get, and they're stoked on that. So if you could just have an area of the ballpark where you could bring your kid and they give them something essentially worthless but sell it, you know, like, look at this.
Like a sticker. Honestly, all my kid wants is a sticker, temporary tattoo, I don't know, a penny, whatever.
Yeah. Yes. And as long as they're like, this penny is a special penny, your kids would be like, wow, so great. They'd remember that penny. They'd shut up for at least an inning, you know, about it. That's worth it to you. You keep bringing them to the spot. They should just have a bin of trash that they hand to kids.
Buddy, we had a million-dollar idea. Yeah, it's a great idea. We just had a 5-year-old's birthday party, and I feel bad for anybody that actually spent any amount of money on a gift for my 5-year-old. No, he's gonna give up and be bored with any toy within days anyways, so like Dollarama is the place to go for him. He is absolutely just enthralled by something that is disposable, because it's all disposable to him anyways. If you, it doesn't matter if you spend $150 on a remote control car. That thing is getting about, you know, 20 minutes of use over its lifespan, so might as well just go to Dollarama.
Yeah. No, I think this is a really, really good idea, and I'm also basing it off of the faint memory I have of being a child of, you would go to a birthday party, and you would find out that there was a goodie bag at the end, and you would be so stoked that there was a goodie bag, right? Like, you would leave, and they would hand you that little plastic bag, and you, or paper bag, and you would go, man, oh man, what a lucky day this is for me. And inside it would be what? Like a little piece of Hubba Bubba and, you know, some...
Yeah,
like a,
again,
exactly,
at the five-year-old birthday party, he hasn't played with his gifts. He got a goodie bag from his own party, and that's all he wants to play with. There's like a sticky guy, you know, one of the guys that you throw at the wall and he sticks.
That's what I'm saying. If you could find a way that you could essentially, this is what they should be doing there. They should have a child area where you bring the kids and you pay an exorbitant amount of price for a goodie bag, but it shuts the kid up for a little while because you go like, look, here's a Rogers Center goodie bag. And it has like a couple of things in it that keep the kid occupied during the baseball game. They profit. You're happier. The kid gets something. This is the best idea. I like Rogers Center. If you don't do this, you're kind of blowing it. Like, I don't know. I gave you this idea for free. It's okay. All right. Let's move on to the actual baseball team. Nice start for Manoa. I saw a stat today that said he's only given up like one run to the Royals and in an insane amount of innings.
Royals are bad.
Yeah, the Royals are really bad. That's the fact that the Jays, it actually makes the Barrios experience even worse, I think.
Yes.
Knowing, seeing these guys over the two games where Kikuchi shuts them down, he goes five innings, he gives up only three hits and a walk, and then Manoa basically one hits them through a game, and you go,
buddy,
we're
not even through a week of the season. They've been shut out three times this season. They're not good. You shouldn't give up eight runs to them, even if they stack the lefties. There was 1,000 lefties in the lineup yesterday. Yeah. And Manoa obviously has pretty severe splits, not as severe as Jose Barrios. But, you know what? It doesn't matter if the left-handed hitters stink, which they do. On the Royals, you should be able to get them out, which he did.
Yeah, so that's what I kind of want to bring up with you, is that I wanted to run down your belief-o-meter, I guess, in the new guys to start this season. Because obviously it's way too early. It's always so funny when you give these takes, because we say, we always have to preface it like cowards, like, hey, yeah, we know it's too early, but we have to talk about the baseball team. And then you still get the commenters who are like, really? X amount of games of the season and you want to talk? And you go, okay. There's just, you can't even idiot-proof it. There's no point in even couching it anymore. So I'm just going to do belief-o-meter on the new guys so far. And I'm going to start with for me, what is the positive, which is Dalton Varsho looks like more than advertised so far.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to put him into a place where I go, wait, is this who he is? Because, again, this might just be a hot streak, and the stuff against lefties has been just overwhelmingly positive so far. But, the defense, the base running, the intelligence, the speed, the bat, some of the power that he showcased now, I got to say, my belief-o-meter, I'm going to do it on a grading system. I'm just going to say, so far, this looks like an A+.
Yeah, no, the whole package looks like an A+, but I do want to take, like, the certain aspects, kind of in a micro way, belief-o-meter. Because in an overall sense, I believe in the player. Did when they consummated the trade, even if he was, like, a league-average offensive guy, we know he's an elite defender. We've already seen it multiple times in left field and then playing center field yesterday. That was already acknowledged. That was like, there was 100% belief on my part in that aspect of his game coming to Toronto from Arizona. What I'm not sure I believe 100%, but like now my radar is up about the possibility. Like I think when we previewed this season, I mentioned his severe splits against lefties for his career, and specifically
Under 700 OPS against left-handed.
Yeah, so I'm not convinced because he's had a couple of good games and his at bats have looked good against lefties. But there is like an element of what I've seen, the plate appearances as a whole, the ability to drag bunt, and how that's a weapon that when he uses it, he's basically perfect with it. What was it, like 15 to 16 over the last 2 years when he's successfully gotten a bunt down that he's been able to leg it out at first base? And also, you go back 2 years ago, and all these splits are small samples because as a left-handed hitter, he wasn't getting a ton of opportunities against left-handed pitchers. But 2 years ago, he was actually pretty good against lefties, and this guy only has one full season of major league experience. Like, he last year was the first time he played what was close to a full major league season. Like, that is something I'm open to the possibility of him not just being passable against left-handed pitchers, but a guy that, like, is just a mainstay in the cleanup spot in this order against all comers, righties, lefties, and maybe, you know, being surrounded by better players. I know the all the studies about lineup construction and protection, there's limited evidence that it actually improves a hitter's performance, but I don't know. This guy looks a little bit different offensively than the guy I expected to see.
Yeah, the lineup construction debate actually drives me nuts, where people, I know that over the large samples in the LX will tell you that it doesn't matter, and lefty-righty, or the, you know, the ability of the person behind you. I think
what does matter is having runners on. Like, what it is truly impactful is having runners on, and then, yeah, a pitcher being stressed because he had to go seven pitches with Vlad right before you.
Yeah, and it was actually even worse against lefties last year. Joe just put it in the doc. It was 5.53 OPS against lefties last season. I thought it was a 600-something OPS. It was worse, 5.53. So I guess I was never really reluctant about Varsho as a player. I think that the price point for him and the timing of his acquisition was always something where I went, okay, well, was this always the plan to trade Moreno? Because it always felt like you really wanted to keep Moreno and move Jansen, and then you ended up having to trade the top prospect. And did you have to overpay for a guy that might be good, not great? And yeah, so far the indication is, like, I just enjoy watching him play immensely. Every part of the Varsho experience to me has been great.
Yeah.
Other positive guy, but I feel like a two things can be true situation. I really enjoy watching Eric Swanson. I think he's very good. He gets the eighth inning yesterday, and he works beautifully. It was just a clinic, right? It was just, that's where I felt the pitch clock and baseball moving around is just elite, right? Where Eric Swanson goes up against a crappy Royals team, and it was just like, bang, 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 this inning is over. Thanks for coming out. Enjoy. I hope you enjoyed watching 45 seconds of Swanson. But Teoscar Hernandez is also hitting home runs in Seattle. He had a two-home run game the other night. I still, for the life of me, can't understand how that was the value for a Silver Slugger. I understand the reasons behind them wanting to move off of Teoscar Hernandez, but I still believe deeply that if they were trying to win a World Series, removing him for a relief pitcher doesn't make a lot of sense, and that they should have just spent the money, and that surrounding this team with all these hardcore baseball players, if he was out of the field with regularity anyways, having as bad as the DH, like, think about how good you'd be feeling with Teoscar Hernandez as DH over, say, Brandon Belt. But either way, like, yeah, your Swanson impression right now is what?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think first impressions for pitchers is maybe the most important, because you get a chance.
Agree.
Every day as a position player, you get a chance every day to change the narrative, and it's bad for Brandon Belt right now. But, yeah, he's going to see plenty of at-bats until perhaps
saving
he doesn't.
Him for
because,
last for a reason.
Yeah. It's not going well for old Brandon Belt. No, I mean, you can see his stock already rising as far as deployment, right? As far as getting some opportunities to make some bigger appearances in baseball games. And I know that's the thing maybe we text most about this Blue Jays team in the offseason is the Teoscar for Eric Swanson and the Canadian Adam Acko, who, I don't know, might be nothing. Could be something, though.
But it could be, and that's fine. And it's funny because, like, Keith Law is extremely high on him, for example, right? I think it was actually him or Kylie McDaniel that came on with me. I'm confusing the two, but mentioned that he doesn't think that there's that much actually separating Macko from hitting the type of prospect here as Ricky Tiedemann. Like, he views them. Yeah, he says that he could be one of those kind of guys if he's able to put it together. So, no, that actually is a good lottery ticket they acquired. It's just, you're trying to win a World Series this year. This is supposed to be an all-in year. I don't really care about the guy who might be something a year or two from now.
No, I don't either. I don't either. Yeah. And the point is valid, and I agree with you. Yeah. Like, you throw, just like in theory, on paper, you throw, instead of Brandon Belt, and God love him, hopefully he turns it around. It's hard to look worse, you know, than he did. Finally, put the ball in play. After getting carved up by Zach Greinke's 91 yesterday. But if you just threw Teoscar Hernandez in the DH slot for this team, doesn't that look amazing? But you've also got a guy who's headed towards free agency. I mean, the off-field stuff, I can't speak with 100% certainty, right? Like, how it impacts it. But clearly, there were two guys that you looked at as maybe the leaders of the Homer Jacket Brigade. And it was funny to see Vlad with the pantomime Homer Jacket yesterday. He's the only guy holding on to that thing. There's some weirdness going on there. I'm not exactly sure what it is. But beyond that, so Teo, you're telling him going into his big payday season, hey, you're a full-time DH, and you're telling the world that he's a horrible, horrible defender and that you wouldn't, for the life of you, put him in even a corner outfield spot because he cost you so many runs out there. I think that was part of it. Certainly, there was a
Benny,
moment
if you
where
give him his $20 million and you say, yeah, don't worry about it. You're going to do this 1 year. You're going to walk. Like, what was he going to prove to the world? That he wasn't a horrible defender? Like, actually, if anything, it probably would have been good for him because he buys into it. I don't buy that narrative at all with Teo. I just think it was a miss. I think it was a miscalculation by them to grab Swanson and to do that early.
No, they wanted to save money, and then maybe there was some like culture stuff that they wanted to move on.
No, I get the culture stuff, but here's what drives me the most nuts about it, is they talked about the saving of the money and the reallocation of the dollars. And then this is the thing with Brandon Belt. He's not some lottery ticket that cost them a couple million bucks, right? He costs $9.3 million this year, like half of Teoscar Hernandez, what he would have needed to be a Blue Jay. Like, it's really, really hard for me to watch Brandon Belt right now and think that he's even going to be able to do a Teoscar Hernandez impression. And going all the way back to, 2021 when he was amazing, and 2020 when he was great too, in those two seasons. Let's just move into the Brandon Belt stuff because, I don't think we have a ton on Swanson, but he's looked good. Like, he's looked good. And Kiermaier, I'm leaving out because he's exactly what I expected him to be.
Yeah.
Like, I have.
Winning baseball player.
Yeah, winning baseball player. Don't love it when he comes up in a big spot with runners on and feel like he can poke one, but when he does get on, good base runner, and he's tracking balls in the outfield. Bassett, that's a write-off game. We'll see what happens over the next one. But the Belt stuff is like, okay, fine. He would say, guys, it's 17 plate appearances. Just let me get used to the season. And I would go, yeah, for sure, but you have one hit. you have one hit. You can understand you can understand how I might be a little concerned that you're supposed to be a really important bat for this team and you have, the one hit and it's the Royals. And,
no, it's beyond that. It's beyond that. It's having the highest swing and miss rate of the entire Blue Jays position players. Yeah, he's swinging and missing like 50% of the time he swings the bat. He just comes up with air. Now, I this is a guy who's 35, is coming off knee surgery, so your antenna is right to be up. I mean, he did say he felt 100% healthy.
He felt great. No excuses. No excuses.
If he didn't perform,
he said, so better not be. Dude, the second you hear an excuse from him, it is lights out. No. It's over. Like,
liar.
If he says something like, "Oh, well, actually, the knee flared up a bit," it's like, "Oh, he knows." Then he's sending out to the world like it's a breaking news. Brandon Belt career over. It's done.
No, the best. I mean, if you want to put your mind in a place that this could get better, which you should, that's it's good to be optimistic.
Well, yes, it absolutely has to get better than OPS plus of negative 11. I should say.
No, so he basically didn't appear in spring training games, right? Until the end of spring training, and then like sparingly. And he's like, no, that's what I do. And maybe that's what he did when he wasn't coming off knee surgery, didn't miss like basically a couple of months of the season with the Giants last season. And that maybe we're going to see for the month of April here an extended spring training for Brandon Belt, that it's going to take him a while to get his legs under him because he had such a bizarre nothing grapefruit league, and that, the real Brandon Belt will show up in May. I'm not saying for sure that's going to happen. I've seen enough early plate appearances, and at least he's getting deep in counts. But boy, that the second strikeout yesterday,
yeah,
that I saw
getting
a guy
the
that
Kevin Biggio deep in counts. Like, that's
It. He was desperate to take a walk yesterday. You could tell. He's like, please call ball four. Please. I don't. The 3-1 pitch. He's like, no, come on. It's got to be ball four, right? No. Oh,
dude.
Man. Bummer. Yeah. So that's it. I love walks. I don't like passivity. And so far we've seen passivity in plate appearances from Brandon Belt.
No, dude, I literally, that at-bat you're talking about yesterday, I pictured Kevin Biggio watching it from the dugout going, I could be the DH. I'm the DH. That's what I do. That's my move. This guy's copying me. He stole all my moves. That's my move that I do. Swing and miss drastically and then pray for walks. Okay, so, yeah, I won't put the concernometer high here, but, yeah, my first impressions of Belt are very much like, oh, this guy feels like he's going to go the way of the Travis Shaws of the world, where I go, yeah, it was nice in theory, or the Kendrys Morales of the world. Nice in theory, but not sure if
At least the commitment, while the dollar amount is, yeah, as you pointed out, not insignificant, it's a one-year deal. So, truly,
yeah, it's a one-year deal.
If he is not helping you by June, you can wave goodbye to Brandon Belt.
Yeah.
But you got to give him a runway.
Yes, yes, yes. No, dude, of course. Well, first of all, you have to give him a runway because this is the problem I have with him. If Brandon Belt was going to be a bench bat, someone that was going to come in to pinch hit, that would have been awesome. But the fact that he had to be there as like the actual, essentially, almost everyday DH for a team that you wanted to cycle in Springer there a little bit more, it just, yeah. If he was going to be an everyday DH, to me, you go, well, wouldn't it have been easier to just make Lourdes Gurriel Jr. that, or Teoscar Hernandez more specifically that, and figure out the rest, and then sign him as someone who could step in there day to day? I don't know. I just, that's still the part of the puzzle to me that just doesn't fit. When we talk about this Jays team fitting and everything being better about this year, that's the piece that I will continue to kind of hammer home on, that I just, boy, especially since they traded Teoscar Hernandez to an American League team that's basically in the same-ish echelon as the expectation as them this year, it just feels
Had even worse start the Mariners have than the Blue
Jays. The Mariners have had a dreadful, dreadful, dreadful start, but he has not been a part of that. Anyways,
no, the point is a good one. Hey, you just add Teoscar Hernandez to this team and I guess subtract Eric Swanson, which is not insignificant, right? Because Eric Swanson's a good reliever, and we knew he would be a good reliever. He was a good reliever last year for the Mariners.
Yeah.
But yeah, is this team better with Teoscar Hernandez in the lineup and no Eric Swanson in the bullpen and no Brandon Belt? I think the answer is pretty clearly yes. So it had to go.
Yeah.
It's either just purely a money thing, or the culture thing means more to this team than we give it credit for.
It does bother me a little bit sometimes. Like, Teo was one of the sterling stories of this organization for years. He was always the guy they went to and said, look at how hard this guy worked to become a major leaguer. Look how hard he worked to become a major leaguer. And then he leaves, and then all of a sudden there's just like these pockets that start whispering, oh, the culture of Teoscar Hernandez. And I'm like, this doesn't sit well with me. I got to tell you, like, there was no Teoscar as a problem stuff. Like, we always knew his defense was annoying and there was some attention to detail stuff, but he was never someone who made a mistake in the outfield and then was like grinning ear to ear and was like, oh, this is cool. He would wear it. Like, you would see it on him when he would make mistakes. Like, he would feel awful, whether that was in post games or that was like on the field itself. I think that dude cared deeply about winning. I think he was an attention to detail guy. I don't think that you go from where he was in his career to where he ended up being. I think that they just, he was different. I just don't feel as comfortable doing the culture stuff or kind of propagating that when all of the evidence was to the contrary that we had up until the moment he wasn't a Blue Jay. Like, that's just, I'm
too suspicious
of that. No,
the culture stuff is, nobody has the straight goods on that, right? Like, and there was even this report, I remember, about him being secretly benched at times last season.
Yeah.
Like, nobody has been upfront with exactly what the, because it's, you're right, it's not just, oh, he's a bad defender and that's a culture thing. And you know, at times it looked like maybe it was an effort thing in the outfield, which I think by and large it wasn't an effort thing, it was just an ability thing defensively.
Yeah, he was horrific at reading the ball. Like, he was really bad at it, and he doesn't have a good arm out there too. Like, he has a strong arm but not an accurate one.
Yeah, so I don't, that it must be something, or I shouldn't say it must be, because maybe it's not. Maybe it was just purely a money thing.
Please don't say must be.
No, maybe it was just purely a money thing, and maybe the Blue Jays were open to spending more on an outfielder, or maybe it was just purely to clear up the money to go after Kevin Kiermaier, and there was a, despite the fact that they're into the luxury tax, they didn't want to go in any further than they had to, that maybe it was just a pure money thing.
My belief will always be that they were really, really hot for Nimmo, and they wanted to make sure they could make that happen. They needed to clear the money, and they kind of moved a little prematurely and thought, we'll be able to make something else work with the outfield just fine. And they did, right? Because they made the Varsho trade, and he's kind of been a stud for them. But that it was a bit of a miscalculation on their part. And then all of a sudden they make the Varsho trade, and they had to throw in Lourdes Gurriel Jr., and they went, damn, now we are kind of short of bat here. Let's sign Brandon Belt. He's at least got the upside, but he's another lefty. This feels like not the greatest thing, but he's the best bat available, and that's the way it sort of shook out, was that it was a plan C, not a plan A. That Nimmo was always the guy, and that, yeah, it Boy. Just it shocked them that he ended up going for what was an insane amount of money that everyone agreed
was if Nimmo was the plan and you thought that you could sign him to a dollar amount that made sense for you, then you totally misread the market and Uncle Steve's ability to just blow everybody out of the water for players that he wants.
But I think there was a little part of that. I do. Like, I think that with all the other free agents that were out there, that maybe they thought Nimmo was going to go a little bit over. He was obviously going to go over value, but not to that degree. Anyways, let's take a quick break. I want to get a quick thought on something that you and I have discussed for a very, very long time on the Masters and on golf in general that is actually coming to fruition. And then, I didn't mention that my Orlando Magic bet hit. I forgot to say that yesterday. We have a future bet now, so yesterday's bet doesn't count. But I have two bets on tonight's Blue Jays game that I really love. So, yeah, quick break. We'll be back. More Good Hour with Ben Ennis.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so right back into it. Ben Ennis. At Sportsnet Ben, if you want to follow him on Twitter or Instagram. At JD Bunkus, if you want to follow me. So, Benny, a conversation I had a million times in a different way was, can golf ever move past Tiger Woods, right? Like, how much did golf need Tiger Woods? Blah, blah, blah. This has been the first time at a major where Tiger Woods has been involved, and I haven't felt like the game needs him. You can tell me if you don't feel that way, but my take is essentially this, that he's there, and everything he does is gravy. Obviously, nothing would be bigger for golf still than if he was able to be there on Sunday, right? Like, that is their ideal dream. They don't want, say, Rory to be a champion of this over Tiger Woods in terms of bringing in the casual viewer. But that the expectations have finally kind of settled into, I think, a pretty reasonable place with Tiger Woods. He's not dominating the narrative of the tournament. And yeah, golf looks like it's in a pretty good place from a narrative standpoint, from selling its next generation of players. But I think that the reason why golf doesn't need Tiger Woods is because golf has LIV. And this idea that the LIV players now versus the PGA has taken over a stronger part of the discourse. That being said, you have Rory McIlroy, who pulled the cowardly move of, actually, those guys are just fine, and I actually love hanging out with them the day before the Masters started, which was just beyond brutal of him to do, but whatever. That's just one man's opinion. So the game, does it... Maybe it doesn't need Tiger anymore, but does it need LIV to be an adversary?
If it wants to get to the place that you want it to go, and obviously, like, this is the one tournament that never tries to promote itself, like, famously could make hundreds of millions of dollars more if it opened up the media rights, but they want to control their own broadcast, so they have, like, four sponsors, and they get, like, no commercial time, and they tell CBS, here's who's doing the broadcast, here's how we're doing it. So do they care about marketing the game? Nah. No, they charge $1 for beers. Like, so this is... This is a weird event to, like, have this conversation about. But yeah, if the powers that be, like, if Jay Monahan really wanted to market this game to the best of its ability, he would play up the rivalry stuff. You know, I was thinking about what this feels like, right? The LIV guys and the PGA Tour guys coming together in this massive event, and it feels kind of like baseball used to in the World Series, where you would never see the National League team if you were a fan of an American League team until you got to the World Series, and then there was this unknown element of it, except, like, if you did interleague baseball for 100 years and then stopped doing interleague baseball for 20 and then started doing the World Series, where these guys hadn't seen each other for forever. So I'm really excited to see just how on top of their game. These guys who have been playing basically joke tournaments for the better part of a year look. But yeah, if you really did care about appealing to casuals or storylines or the Netflix series, you would play it up. It was never going to happen at the Masters, right? There was never going to be a food fight at the Champions Dinner. There was never going to be Rory throwing a tee at Patrick Reed on the green at Augusta National.
No, that's honestly, all of what you said is perfect. That was very, very good. I love the NL-AL comparison. And you're right that this tournament, it was never going to be this way. It would be actually so great and would show you the power of the Masters if at the very next one, Rory was like, oh, I was just kidding about what I said about... Well, I don't know why he's Australian there. Was like,
or is it... Every it's accent like, is Australian to you.
I hate those guys. Yeah, like...
man. Rory... Yeah. Like, I enjoyed the F. Phil stuff from the Netflix thing. And,
yeah, it was great.
And Rory, though, has walked it back a little bit because he's obviously... Like, he's not... Rightly so, honestly.
No,
and
rightly so.
Did we all wring our hands a little too much about the LIV thing at the outset? Sure. I mean, is it ugly? Of course. But yeah, the ugliness around sports that we don't talk about. Yeah, we just watched the World Cup in Qatar.
But I'm not even talking about that part of it, man. Like, I don't care about that. Like, I just don't like that this guy genuinely was talking about how important the PGA's history was and the legacy of the PGA.
Well, but then they went in and created these designated events that are huge purses, and they're going to probably blow up some cuts as well, right? Like, they're going to have tournaments that... Yeah, so he was wrong.
I'm saying I get it, but what drives me nuts is when he's at that podium and he's going, it's just great to have all the best players in the world back together again. It's like, yeah, that was the whole point of essentially why you were mad, and now you found a way to have this middle ground. I hate the fence sitting by the guy that was supposed to kind of take the reins and be the face of golf and the face of just, the narrative that these two sides really cared and competed against each other, that it felt a little bit more like a team rather than an individual sport. So I'm disappointed in Rory. I won't change that. But yes, I would say I hate also that the only way for me to get actually, because I can do the Irish accent or at least a character version of it, but the only way for me to get into that mindset is to start with tar ta tar ta tar. That's like my way of hitting the note, you know? Some people, when they do their singing voice, they have ways to warm up. When I do my accents, I have little pockets that I have to do to start it, and that's the one for me. Tar ta tar ta tar. Oh, I'm Rory McIlroy. Yeah, I know. And it's like, is it though? Like, I don't think.
I have no idea.
No, Irish people are good sports. They don't really care. They just hate it when you think that you're better at it than you are, you know? But they also have the best sayings. They say stuff like, what's the crack? And what's the crack? Like, as in, like, what's happening? I love that so much. It's such a good one. What's the crack? And it's like, yes. I know. You don't know. Anyway, I wish it was a little spicier. I think they need LIV to continue in order to really feel like some of these guys are on a different level, which is, yes, more into the casuals. But that's me. I'm a casual fan, and I watch the majors. And so I understand for the hardcores where they go, yeah, no, we don't need you. We don't really care because it's our thing. It's like, fine. But for my side of the aisle, we need this stuff. Ben Ennis, go enjoy your... guessing free lunch at the stop. All the other.
There is a lunch. It said on the media release that there's a lunch.
Dude,
like that much, I know for sure.
You're such a Costanza-like figure where you'll walk around guaranteed pointing at that thing if you don't see food immediately. Like
exactly.
This says lunch, lunch, lunch.
No,
and then if they offer you some finger food, you're going to be like, a finger food is not a lunch. You're right out of Seinfeld.
Soup, buddy. Actually, soup is a lunch, but it's not a meal, but it is. Yeah. It's probably a lunch. No, I hopefully get to sample some of the food that is being served at each of the social spaces, but here's my guess is that it's like some stale sandwiches, but we'll see. I'll report back.
I think it'll be better than that. All right. Ben Ennis, listen to him later today. He'll give you his full review of those things on FanDrive. See you, pal. There he goes. It is now time for Best Bets, brought to you by Betano, the 2022 Global Sports Betting Operator of the Year. I crushed it yesterday on Betano. I won all the money back that I gave them the day before on my horrific March Madness finals pick, and believing in Jose Barrios, or a couple of days ago, actually, I rather should say. But either way, yesterday nailed it in terms of under, nailed it in terms of making sure that it was betting the Blue Jays. I think I might put a sprinkle on the Jays again tonight, even though it's minus 200. I just have, if Kevin Gausman loses to this Royals team and Jordan Lyles is on the mound to oppose him, then yes, the curse is very real that I'm talking about. I think minus 200 is actually not that bad of a price, all things considering, like watching this Royals team that, Benny mentioned has been shut out three times. So There's a couple of bets from this game that I really like, and both are long shot-ish. So obviously the Jays are going to bat first, and that's why the number is this way. But Jordan Lyles is not a big K per nine guy, and Kevin Gausman obviously really is. Lyles is sort of a whatever pitcher, kind of a junk baller, and he's out here tonight. If you want to bet first strikeout of this game, Kevin Gausman is plus 177. I think that's pretty decent. So I'm going to lock that one in. I also was pointed out by Chris Black on Twitter that Matt Chapman has 5 career home runs off Jordan Lyles. He, to have a home run today, is plus 450 on Betano. So today a little more long shotty, but a couple more long shots on the Jays. So Matt Chapman to hit a home run, plus 450, and Kevin Gausman to record the first strikeout, plus 177. Those are your Betano best bets, brought to you by Betano Sportsbook. The game starts now. Subscribe and review. I'll see you tomorrow after Leafs Bruins.